Yeah, you're very welcome along to another edition of Terrace Talk. We're hitting the end of November now, hard to believe it. Soon we'll be talking about the C word. We won't mention that this evening. We've another couple of weeks to go before we get there. But plenty of sporting action on around the county, and we'll be reviewing a majority of that. First hour, all folks in on football, of course, with our three Kerry sides in Munster semi-final action. We also had two divisional finals over the weekend, and we've got a couple to look forward to next weekend as well, and of course a few more bits of Kerry news to talk about, including the new Kerry jersey. We're going to be style icons later on in the hour, give you our verdict on the new Kerry jersey, and we want to hear what you make of it as well. Second hour then, we're heading rallying of course in Killarney next weekend, the Killarney Historic Rally taking place between Killarney and Kinmare next weekend, so we'll be talking to a few legends of the sport and the organising committee as well to see how things are going ahead of a big weekend next weekend. We'll be chatting to a Kerry cross-country runner and a powerlifter as well in the second hour. So a fine mix of sports between now and 8 o'clock. As ever, if you're at any games or anything the weekend, if you have any views of what you might have seen or heard over the weekend, do get in touch. You can text or WhatsApp 083 300 3300, or you can call 066 712 3666. Or if you're further afield, you can email terracetalk@radiokerry.ie. Joining the company as ever of Liam Brosson and John Kennedy. We're going to start with the Munster Championships, of course. The Munster Football Championships took place the weekend, with Dingle on Gwaedlet and Barry McKenny at all on winning ends to book their places into the Munster Finals. Lads, you're welcome along. Liam, I'll start with you, and I suppose the senior semi-final, it was one-way traffic from the first minute to the very last, and Dingle very much dispatched of Mungret St. Paul's fairly handily.
Yeah, even it was, I suppose we said it here last week, that we tipped the three Kerry teams to come out on top, and the three of them, to be fair, did the business. But yeah, Dingle and Mungret, we were, I was expecting Mungret maybe to put up some sort of a showing, but 2.15 to 2 points. I was told today by a few people that, people should have got their money back coming out at the end of the match. It was that bad, but look, myself and John have been on sidelines where things can go wrong as well, and it just didn't go right for Mungret. But to be fair, look, Dingle, they were a 19-point win. They did enough to get over the line. I don't think you could. Johnson. No, I don't think it was any good, Ivan, for Dingle, because they're going in against the Bars now, a very good Cork Kerry rivalry. And I suppose, look, the Bars have been tested. They have two very good, very close games played in the last couple of weeks. But then on the other hand, Dingle have kind of time to recover now. And I suppose there's never anything between a Cork and Kerry team in a Munster final. So, look, Dingle won't take much away with it. But at the same time, look, Paul Gainey was moving well freely. He looked as if he was, the hamstring was good again. He kicked 3 points. Conor Gainey 2-2 up front. So, look, they have things to work on this week. But I'm sure the game against the Bars will take a life of itself.
Mm-hmm. 1-8 no score at half time, John, and you kind of feared the worst. They did get 2 points on the board, nothing from play, unfortunately. But I said, not a huge maybe learning curve for Dingle, but it's probably nice to get back in the groove after getting beaten by Ungwaedlet in that semi final in West Kerry, and just kind of get back on the horse and get that victory. And I know it mightn't have done a huge amount for them, but 60 minutes of football under the belt, very important before Munster final.
Yeah, very important. And they got a number of weeks for to get the injuries right, as Liam said there, particularly Paul Gainey, Dylan and Connor too. They rested some of those lads for the West Kerry Championship. Obviously their sights are set on Munster, and they'll have learned little from it. Like Liam said, difficult day for Mungret. They didn't probably see themselves in this position at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. Great year. Listen to their manager, Kevin O'Hagan, they were delighted with the year. But, they really hit a roadblock at the weekend, and we've all been involved with teams when things don't go right. 6 or 7 players missing.
Down big players.
Players.
County players missing.
Billy
Lang
during the week. Billy, one of their backroom team. And, it was no hearsay. They were missing those. You can't afford to miss players like that. You're coming up then, an inexperienced team at this level, you'll be punished. Mm-hmm. And they were punished. Dingle have been around. They've had their disappointing days. Mm-hmm. They've had their close defeats. So it's a victory 2.13, 2.11, I think, by the Ganeys out of the 2.15. Paddy Corcoran is on record as saying a lot of room for improvement. It's always a good thing to have going into a Munster final. They're going against a Bar team that are really firing in all cylinders, had a very good victory over Aroge, but from Dingle's point of view, to the passage, semi-finals are there to be won, and they won it.
Yeah, John mentioned room for improvement there, Liam, and it has been said over the last 24 hours or so, but very hard to know like how, you know, up to steam Dingle could even get. And you know, when a game is kind of like that and you're so far ahead, it does start kind of peter out, and you know, you could keep going, keep the, you know, the foot in or whatever, but you know, you probably don't need to, you don't want to risk injuries. And I think everyone came out of the game unscathed as well, which is important for Dingle after a fairly chronic year for injuries for them as well.
Yeah, I suppose, look, Ivan, the main thing is, I think we all know around the table how good Dingle are and what level they can get to. I suppose after 10 or 15 minutes last day, you could see that that game was going to be a kind of a non-runner for them. And look, like, we'll get back to the Bars game again. I think, you know, they will up it probably another 80 or 90% from the game, and they have that capability as well, you know, with the players that they have. You know, we saw Bars was a couple of years ago against Dax. Mm-hmm. You can see already they didn't want to go tossing for home venues and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so probably looking like Turles, I suppose, or someplace like that again.
Yeah, you know, Gaelic grounds closed at the moment, is it?
That's what they're saying. All right, yeah. You know, so they took Stax Turles that time, so, and I presume they'll try to do the same with Dingle. You know, so but I think, look, as poor as the game was yesterday, I agree with Ivan, it was a run out for them to get things going, to see where they were. Going into, I suppose, unexpected to see what Mungers were going to come. But I think it was good for Dingle because they looked as if the injuries are kind of coming right now again. And I suppose, look, the next 2 weeks will be a big improvement for them. Even training now, Munster final, or Kerry and Cork in Munster final, there will be skin and hair flying.
Yeah, 2 week waste, John. But you know, we saw Dingle lose on penalties the last time they got this far. They will want to keep going in this competition. Now, I know a lot of talk is about winning in Kerry and winning the county championship or potentially your club championship or whatever else. But you know, to get to Munster final, now you want to win that, and you do, you know. A lot of people, maybe neutrals, are talking Croke Park and everything else as well. So, like, getting to Munster final now, they'll want to win that Dingle, won't they?
Yeah, they will. And, you know, the Bars are going really well. It's going to be a great... The ingredients have been a great game. Brian Hayes is on fire for them, 3-3 at the weekend. Stephen Sherlock there, you know, Jimmy Barry Murphy involved. And you can feel the feel-good factor coming out of the Bars camp. But, look, Dingle... look at the spread of inter-county talent they have, and they're led by the Ganeys. Mark O'Connor, crucial to them. There's talks already, will he be around? And there'll be a lot of gamesmanship coming up to that. I'd expect Mark to be in the middle of the pack.
That plane will be held back for a week.
We were told that he was only going to be here for the semi-final, then afterwards they're kind of saying they'll see what it's like for the final, so they might, as I said, hold the jet. The Bars did get a good test away to Clonmel, obviously a tough place to go as well, John, up to Clonmel Commercials. They only won by 3 points in the end, but that a tough game for them, and probably one they definitely needed in the quarter final. Obviously they had a big enough win yesterday, but that quarter final will stand to the Bars as well.
Yeah, you need a test like that, and you know, that's where Dingle, yesterday was no test really for them. The Bars were tried out above in Clonmel. There was a lot of emotion around Clonmel with the departure of Philly Ryan, his son playing in goals, proud Clonmel men. So all that added up to it. So it was a big victory up there and home, away from home, their first game out. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could see the beat Aroke, who had been impressive in Clare's, a big victory. But look, semi-finals are there to be won, as I said. The Kerry Cork factor, where it will be played, and you know, it's Dingle will be looking at this. Maybe not the players and management, but the supporters will look at it. And you look at the teams that are gone out of the championship all over the country. You look at some of the teams that are going to be in the latter stages. Dingle are as good as any of these.
Wide open.
But I think Liam's point about the injury is very important. If Dingle have everybody, there'll be a match, and I think that's where Mark O'Connor is critical to them, because Barry Dan being out, you know, also James Hoare and Conor Sullivan, long-term injuries. Mark O'Connor is absolutely crucial.
Power on the middle of the field.
Yeah. Billy O'Connor, like, you know, they're having a great year, very effective, but they can't afford, they want everybody available.
Yeah. Sticking with West Kerry, but their intermediate counterparts, or senior next year, but intermediate for this year, on Gaeltacht Liam, a good win over Carfin. Didn't have it their own way for the majority, and only it was kind of maybe towards the end you kind of saw that Gaeltacht were kind of putting away and going to win this one, but a very good test for them and probably something they needed as well.
Yeah, exactly. It was always going to be tough going up to Carfin. John, we were talking last week about it, and it's a proud footballing area up there as well. Gaeltacht probably were in charge of a long periods of that game, with Corrifin never throwing the towel. But I think it was the first half performance that got Gaeltacht over the line. I think it was 1-7 to 4 points at half time, mm-hmm. and they held that lead all through the second half. Then their main players came to the fore again. The Aino Conacours, Tomás O'Shea ended up with 1-2.
Great goal as well.
Brino Beglia, 3 points. You could see Aidan Welsh battling around the middle of the field. And even though he's only after coming back from carrying a bit of an injury, so they seem to be on the upper curve now as well. So, and we're heading in for another Kerry derby.
Yeah, I think it's the first time. I think I read it today. I'll actually get it open up the paper in front of me. I think I read it in the paper today. It was the first time in 2 decades that the 3 finals, senior, intermediate, and junior, are all a Kerry Cork matchup. John, probably not a great look for the rest of the province, but as kind of that sort of rivalry, sort of Kerry Cork clubs against each other, it does kind of whet the appetite down here.
Definitely. The appetite, and a Bologer are managed by Ray Keane, brother of Peters. Right, yeah. That's another little sideshow that's going to be a Kerry man, which he was with the Bars for a few years, and it really whets the appetite because there's something special in a Kerry Cork encounter, whatever level it just brings the tension of everybody. And on Gaeltacht will be favourites, there's no doubt about that. And they got a stern test up on Corrifin. We expected that, Liam. We spoke about during the week, and these guys are really committed, good footballers. The likes of Jamie Malone and Garrow Cahill, McGroarty, they're all good players. And I think when you're on the road, when you go away to play a match and you get a stern test, that'll stand well show, particularly going into a final.
Yeah, this time of year, Liam, the pitches are often against us. It looked fairly heavy going in Carfin, so Gaeltacht will definitely be glad of that kind of 2 week layoff just to rest the feet again and get back into some bit of training anyway ahead of a Munster final.
Yeah, I suppose the quarter finals and semi finals are always a kind of, you could be inside in a kind of a hole of mud really, because there'd be a lot of club grounds.
Yeah.
Whereas now when you get to a Munster final, you're probably going into a provincial ground. Mm-hmm. Close enough that anyway, so the pitches will be a bit better, but guaranteed there was going to be the grass probably up around the ankles, a bit of mud. It wasn't going to be a game for the nice football anyway. You have to roll up the sleeves, and I think Gaeltacht did that.
Yeah, most definitely. Mentioned Tomás O'Shea there, John, and he took the goal very well. I saw it up on social media as well. Kind of great build up play, but he'd pure passion in him. He wants to win a Munster medal. You could see it after he was kind of ging up the crowd after the goal went in, because up to that point, until they got the goal, really, it was kind of point for point. And I think they didn't have a huge amount threatened goal, but Carfin were well able to score their points from distance as well.
Yeah, they were able to score their points, as I said. Cahill and McGroarty got 5 each, and but Tomás O'Shea, he has that knack of getting goals. He's elusive up front, and I think he's going to be crucial for them going forward, because at this point in the season, with the conditions, goals are huge scores. Mm-hmm. And I think the Corrifin keeper Neilan made a great save for Aino Beglia as well. I think they were 4-1 up after 18 minutes, and they're game changers really.
Yeah.
Saves like that, but the goals are big scores, and I think the experience that Gaeltacht have, you could see after their championship win in Kerry, they weren't, Darragh Kinnaird was interviewed on Radio Kerry, I think, they're not prepared to sit on the laurels. They want to go further. They're going to be seeing them next year in Kerry, and they're in a Munster final now, and they want to kick on.
Yeah. Is there a small bit of pressure, Liam, on the intermediate and junior? Because there's so much talk about Kerry and kind of the build-up to Carfin. I heard on the radio the weekend, it was kind of it was Kerry's, 9th-best or 10th-best club against, Clare's 14th or 15th. And there's kind of, everyone's kind of looking at the Kerry clubs, A, because club football's so strong down here, but then B, the sort of grading of it and where they are. Is there kind of additional pressure on the likes of Anguilla, and we'll talk about Paddy Mack in a second, to kind of go all the way and kind of it's nearly expected to win the All-Ireland from outside of Kerry. I know the camps won't be talking about it inside, but does that add a small bit of pressure?
Well, it probably does, even a small bit. All right, but I'd say inside the camps, it's their own pressure that add on, because look, you are probably looking at the history of the club competition, and Kerry have been very strong in the past in it. So obviously you want to do what probably your neighbours did, and a lot of clubs have the neighbours that have went on and won our islands, so you want to carry on. So yeah, in that there would be a small bit of pressure, but at the same time it's an All-Ireland campaign, so, and you're a Kerry footballer, no matter whether it's junior, intermediate or senior, you want to go and you want to win medals, and all these players, the three sets of players, they want to win, they want to do their own, they want to make their own little bit of history. They're not worried about what happened in the past number of years. They want to make their own history for their parish, for their club. And I think that's what really drives it on here in Kerry.
Yeah. Just on that, actually, John, there, Liam kind of mentioned it in passing. It was, you know, that kind of, it's so hard to win an intermediate or junior premier in Kerry unless you kind of go back down the next year. You're kind of under pressure to win that All-Ireland that year, or maybe the Munster, from maybe the outside looking in, is kind of a, you know, you've worked very, very hard to win an intermediate or worked very hard to win the junior premier, and all of a sudden now you've got one kind of shot to go on. If you're a senior level, you might win senior next year, you might win senior, whatever else. But with intermediate and junior, when you kind of go up, you're kind of hoping to stay up. So this is kind of a one chance saloon sort of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it shows as well, Ivan, that the quality of football we have in Kerry, how competitive all the championships are. Mm-hmm. I know the structures are different, and we'll all agree with that, but the team that comes out, you listen to during the week there, the different managers were interviewed in Radio Kerry, the opposition managers, and they spoke about the pace, about the quality, not giving away the ball, all the basics of Gaelic football. Mm-hmm. But Kerry do it very well. And you know, you look at all the championships here, like, they're so keenly contested that when you get out,
you're well equipped to go.
And that's the difference, I think, really.
Mm. You're kind of ahead when you get out there. We move on to the junior lads, and a good win for Ballymacready. Kind of in the end, Liam, it was sort of a game, I was listening to it here, and it was sort of Ballymac would kind of go 4 or 5 up, and next thing Clamel would rattle a goal or a 2-pointer or something. They kept them right in it and probably kept them honest for the majority, but it's probably, of all the teams, Ballymacready had probably needed a good solid game before a final, didn't
they? Exactly, because they had nothing played, Ivan, really, since the winning down here in Kerry. And they were kind of going into the unknown as well, up into the back, into Clonmelogue's kind of home patch, you could say, really. But look, Dara Bradrick kicked them off with the first point of the game. You know, after 8 minutes, then it was a point apiece, and you were kind of saying it's going to be tough here. But the only thing I found with Clonmel was they were lacking ideas up front.
Yeah.
You could see that they had a pilot possession, but they couldn't punish.
Mm-hmm.
No, but Ballymac then were creating fierce opportunities. No, and then on the 17th minute, Jack Joy hit the back of the net. It just created that little bit of a space.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I think Ballymac would be a small bit disappointed with a lot of the way they kind of played.
Conceded,
there was one or two chances where that little slip of a pass across the goals and it could hit the back of the net. You know, the wrong decisions, that kind of thing. Kicked the goalkeeper's hands. I know it was about 7 or 8
times.
No, small little things like that. You will get away with the likes of that against the lesser teams, but you're heading now against, you know, teams from now on, the teams they're going to be meeting are going to be more competitive. It's going to level up a small bit. So all them small things you got to punish. But to be fair, time in the second half they came out and, you know, they hit the back of the net. Daniel Daly, there was exciting. He got, was it 2-2 or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, so he was the main instigator up front. Jack Jai, Martin McGivigan, you know, the two boys around the middle of the field, Dara Bradrick, Aidan Breen, you know, very strong defensively. You know, they put up a good display as well, but I think they'll have sterner tests along the line. So look, it was a good game from just to get the cobwebs kind of knocked off.
Yeah, I'd say that's John, like, Ballymac, to be fair, never looked like losing it, but kept kind of letting Clonmelogue back into the game, and that'll definitely be a huge learning curve. That won't be able to happen against Budavan, because if you get any bit ahead there and they come back into it, they could really win fairly lively.
There's no doubt about that, Ivan, but I suppose if you look at it, the gap since Ballymac won, Liam said, nothing competitive. Gaeltacht and Dingle had games in the championship.
They're distant competitions.
You can't beat that. I listened to Ian Blake, the manager on Radio Kerry last week, and he mentioned about that the town championship wasn't played. Can you imagine if they had 1 or 2 rounds of that?
Yeah,
what
would
do for them? You know, hard hitting, competitive, getting you that bit sharper. But look, this was a banana skin. you know, going into the unknown, going up to Clonmel, and you don't know what to expect when you meet these teams. You can get a bad day, you can get a few bad decisions going against you, and if things go wrong, you know, but I think that they were never going to lose the game. And like Liam said, the guys he's mentioned, McGivigan was very impressive again. Thought Ty Brick very impressive as well. Niall Collins finished very strong, kicked 3 points. You know, they have the potential to do it, but they'll need to be more consistent and certainly take the chance against Butvint. Butvint will be a different kettle of fish.
Yeah. Yeah, a different game for them, of course. That's coming up on a Saturday week. So we've got two games on the Saturday, I think, isn't it? Yeah, and one on the Sunday. So a feast of Kerry Cork football to look forward to in a couple of weeks, Liam.
Yeah, we're going to, that's going to be enjoyable. Now, it's a pity that we can't play it all in the same venue and we'd have a good day.
Have the one day.
But look, it's going to be a big day out for all the parishes and all the clubs. No, it is always a big thing. You know? Yeah. So it's something to look forward to now. And it passes away the winter as well.
It does. And Joe, we actually talked about kind of the crowds at games all year. There seemed to be a massive crowd from each, between Dingle and Gaeltacht and Ballymac at each venue, even listening on Radio Kerry here on Saturday to the game in Clonmel. There was nearly the same shouts for the Ballymac scores as there was for Clonmel, which is great to see. And that kind of pride in the parish does come out in Munster, doesn't it?
Exactly. Then you hit the nail in the head, the pride in the parish. And we see, and I suppose we're lucky enough down here, we've seen it for years from nearly a lot of clubs. No, and everyone gets on, you know, the colours are flying and everyone gets on the bandwagon. Even people who probably haven't gone to games all year, they will go to these games. You know, it just brings out the pride.
That sort of tour bus and getting out of the county for a day or whatever.
It's history as well. Ballymac's first time ever coming out of Kerry. That's history, like, for young and old. You know, you take that chance when you get there, don't you? Gaeltacht and Dingle have been there, but this is huge for Ballymac, huge for the three clubs.
And that hope then for Croke Park, John, lives live as well, doesn't it?
I think it was brilliant, and that came in under Sean Kelly. I think that initiative to allow these club teams represent their county in Munster and all the provinces and ultimately get to Croke Park. We've seen it, Liam. Yeah. It has changed the mindset of clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a chance at Croke Park. Go for it.
Because we hate saying going back in our day, but in our day the county league was nearly number one and then your district was number two and then your the intermediates and stuff it's the way it has flipped completely now.
Yeah, but it is that kind of day out in Croke Park, especially for the smaller, obviously massive for Dingle, don't get me wrong, with senior and everything else, but Joe, when it comes down to the likes of your Ballymac, you said, John, the first time in it, and kind of, you know, you think back through the years of the likes of Brusna playing and winning in Croke Park, like that, like for small little villages and rural areas in Kerry, like that's a huge reward for people who have been going to the matches, even not just for the year, but for the last, you know, couple of decades and all that, kind of the older statesmen in the club as well, to be able to see their club line out in Croke Park must be massive.
It's huge because look, every club has an ambition, and when you can get to win, and you know, every club probably gets a kind of a generation of players as well, that you can go this far, and like John said earlier, you've got to take advantage when you get there. And I think we've been very good with that. We carry it on through the years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why everyone wants to kind of knock us off our perch. That's an inter-county level, and I think long may it continue. But it comes from having the competitive nature of the county leagues and our club championships down here. And then when you get out, you're well equipped to get out then.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speak about pride in the parish, it'll go from Munster finals to district finals after the break. Two finals, of course, over the weekend, and two more to look forward to next weekend. Again, get your comments and reviews or anything else you want into the programme this evening. 083 300 3300, you can text or WhatsApp there, or you can call 066 712 3666.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to the programme. So from Munster we head back to the districts, and John, the North Kerry final was looking likely to head the way of Listowel, and ranked outside of Knocknagosh were going to get beaten, but they didn't read the script in the last couple of minutes, did they?
No, it was a novel pairing, we said last week, Ivan, and it certainly lived up to that. I think it's been a breath of fresh air for the North Kerry Championship, Liam, and, you know, Listowel, firm favourites. They're the Arctic, which everyone goes by in North Kerry. Fantastic club, big numbers, but Knocknagoshal didn't read the script. You know, they were up at half-time 5-3, but they got rocked back. Conor Sweeney, two goals, Darry Lynch a goal, and after 45 minutes, 3-8 to 7 points. Mm-hmm. And I suppose everybody that was there and listening to Tim Wynehan, Radio Kerry, it was over. But back came Knock, and you know, Conor Cahill got the goal, and I think they kicked Cahill McKelly, get Jack Brosnan kicked 2 points, and John Bell, and all of a sudden 2 point game, and then the drama continued. You know, a high ball in, Darren Leahy won it, went up and high and won it, turned and kicked it out. 45.
Mac O'Connor.
O'Connor. Yeah. You know, it's amazing speaking to people last night, like, about that rule. The amount of people that don't know it. Liam and myself saw it today with Dingle, but it's still a lot to do for Knocknagoshal, you know. But I think Bell gave a quick free to Jack McKelligott, and you know, his father Sean would be proud of what he did. What a strike,
yeah.
The inside of the boot.
Bedlam, yeah. Bedlam in Brosnan.
I've seen the video on social media. Someone had it from the sideline, oh, yeah. And the Knocknagoshal supporters were just jumping for joy. But it was a well-worked kick and everything from a 45. And again, with the conditions and everything else, you kind of wondering if you'd take the 45 on at that point, but that wouldn't have been enough. So you needed the 2-pointer as well. So it was just...
It was a baldy kick, Ivan.
Oh, yeah.
It was, absolutely. Yeah.
And no better men than Jack Mack, because he's dead before would have done it anyway as well.
Yeah.
No, but there's good breeding with the Cahill and Jack there, the two McKelligots. But like, I suppose we heard it all today, gutsy and all the different things, the fighting spirit, they never gave up. Now, to be down 10 points with 15 minutes to go, sure, most people were throwing the towel even in a final, a huge crowd there, you know, and they just kept tipping away. And I think it was a 1-8 to a pint they scored in the last 15 minutes. No, but the one thing that Knocknagoshal have is they have fitness.
Yeah.
You know, and they're young, I think 13. They've already, there was only one sub they brought in, John, or they brought in one blood sub
and
as well.
The blood sub is right, yeah.
Yeah. No, right, one sub came on the field. So I think out of the starting 15, I think 13 of them are under 25 years of age.
Yeah.
So, and they're good footballers, the likes of Jack Brosnan, the Bills, the Welches, all these guys. They can play football. You know, Shane O'Connell around the middle of the field has a fantastic job done with them. You know, they're, and I said, we've seen it against Brosnan, we've seen it against Desmond's and Sinan's. It's the last 10 minutes where Knocknagoshal really do come into their own.
Yeah.
So there's huge credit deserved to the management team, to the fitness that they have. But it's a fairy tale. Yeah. You know, if they were an American football team, they'd be making films out of it.
Yeah.
The way this campaign has gone for them.
Yeah.
Like.
No, 100%. And I think, John, Liam mentioned there as well, I think kind of playing with no fear, you can have the fitness and everything else, but sort of, you know, a team to go into their first semi-final, first ever semi-final, win it on that day, go into the final and get a draw. They're kind of, like, they just seem to be kind of fearless, that they're kind of a, I wouldn't say nothing to lose because there's a lot on the line, but they kind of, it seems that sort of attitude of kind of go out and see what happens in the day, and it seems to be working for them.
Yeah, the mental toughness is unbelievable. Like, and I think you put into perspective when you look at Listowel Limerick, Micheál Kennedy, Eddie Healy, Eddie Brown, and Niall Collins, the half back line. I mean, Giorgio Grimes, Darragh Leahy in the middle of the field, you know, Aaron Kennelly, Jamie McVeigh, Darragh Lynch, Sam Tarrant. Like, these guys, we know them in North Kerry, they're hugely talented footballers.
They will be disappointed.
Oh, they'll be disappointed.
A 10 point lead.
Absolutely.
They should not be losing that.
Enda Murphy and the lads will be very disappointed with that. But look, the game was there, they had it, and it was taken away from, and it was sheer tenacity. And what this has done, Ivan, is for every small club, I'm not saying Knocknagoshal is small, but you look at it, 38 players named for Listowel, 20 for Knock, and maybe it was there two of them that could play.
Yeah.
But what Shane Connell has done with those, and I've seen him firsthand for the last number of years as a coach and a trainer, he's playing himself.
Yeah.
What he has done, that level of fitness, you know, they're missing James and Edmund Welsh, two fantastic footballers. There's not a mention of it. They're getting on with what they have, but Liam knows it from the Cairns. They have 6 or 7 very good young lads.
Yep.
No fear, no inhibitions, and go for it. And that was typified by young McKelligott kicking that equaliser. But a carnival day in North Kerry, fantastic set up by Brosnan, great game of football, excellent refereed by Patrick Dowling as well. You know, you have to say that there was no word about the ref after, and that says a lot. That says how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're all looking forward to Ballylongford next weekend for the replay, and there'll be another huge crowd.
Most definitely. I suppose, talking about replays, we can move on to Mid-Kerry, lads. And Liam, I suppose over to you. And again, again, that was a raucous end last week, and this week it was quite similar towards the end, but Beaufort managed to win this one by a point, and they're the Mid-Kerry champions.
Yeah, look, I suppose it went down to the wire. It was 4 points all at half time. There was nothing between the both teams. a tricky breeze back there, a very heavy, sticky field. No, it wasn't a day for the nice, lively footballer. But both teams did try. Mm-hmm. To be fair, I think Milltown will be probably disappointed. I think they missed a penalty in the first 10 minutes, hit the upright twice. They could have went in at half time up a few points. Probably overall missed three goal opportunities. But Bow 14, when you actually skin it back a small bit, they had a pile of possession. No, they went up 3 points. They actually went up 3 points, was it twice? They went up 4 points at one stage, but Milltown kept on their coattails. And going in, it was the 59th minute, Aina hit a fantastic 2-pointer free. Mm-hmm. Brought it to a point. Bit of confusion towards the end again, basically, when we were just on about rules. You know, there was a breach call. Milltown had the ball over the sideline. The buzzer went. There was a breach called, but it was a double breach. You know, so a lot of people know a double breach was a hot ball.
Right.
So the hot ball went on then. The play still went, even though the hooter had went. The hot ball went. Milltown had an opportunity, and unfortunately they didn't get their chance. But it just shows the rules. We're on about rules. No, I suppose a lot of players don't even know the rules. Not mind the supporters.
Yeah.
No, there was fellas coming off the field after they couldn't figure out what was after happening. It was like the boys kicking the ball over the in line and stuff like that. And these are players.
Players.
These are players. You know, so it's something I suppose clubs and managers will have to sit down with at the start of the year and just go through the main stuff anyway.
Yeah, well, we're still in our first year, really, John, of these new rules, aren't we? And I think we're all learning. I think with Mark Connolly, that went out. I was dumbfounded what was going on. It's just it's funny, as I suppose there's always little bylines and these things that just take time, and they were being tweaked throughout the league and into the championship and inter-county as well, so very hard for the clubs to get up to speed with them as well. And if you weren't paying huge amount of attention to the county, it was like a new game for the club teams when they came back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a few, and even ourselves, like that one with Mark O'Connor again with Darragh Leahy, that's a lot of people didn't know about that rule. You kick the ball dead, the game is over, but it has to go over the sideline.
Yeah.
But I suppose the biggest thing is, and the common denominator for the club championships this year, the divisional championships as well, the quality of football, the scores, that's down to the new rules. There's no question or doubt about it. It's a 4-point game now or a 6-point game. It's not insurmountable. Couple of 2-pointers, you're back in it. The quality of football that's been played, I think we've said it at inter-county level, but at club level, the quality of marquee forward inside, so difficult to mark him now. Mm-hmm. I think it's adding to the game. And the supporters are falling out because there's been bigger crowds at the divisional championship this year than in many years, I tell you.
There definitely has. And you're mentioning new rules there, and realistically speaking, North Kerry Championship would probably gone to the Stole if it wasn't for him with the 2-pointer at the end for Nottinghamshire. Maybe people at the Stole aren't fans of new rules today. But it just goes to show that maybe like before, Nottinghamshire would have had to go for goal. You probably had 15 men behind the ball for the Stole. And probably would have been turned over. There would have been a foul.
It the same yesterday behind in Killarlin. No, only it was Aina that hit the 2-pointer towards the end. Next, all of a sudden, there was a point in it. They hit a 2-pointer before that to bring the lead down as well. So it has made the game more entertaining.
But Liam, one thing about the double breach, was it breached by both sides
both
at the
sides
same time?
At the same. Well, you see, that's up to who sees it.
Who sees it? Yeah, exactly.
No, whatever time you see, but that was.
Yeah, because a few people were asking today, how was the double breach? Did one team breach it before the other?
I think what happened was there was so much excitement and the buzzer had gone. Yeah. The players forgot themselves. And they all came down the field. the old mentality of get bodies behind the ball, and next time all of a sudden too many bodies behind the ball.
But I think the positives in the new rules far outweigh the few negatives to start.
Yeah. I think, to be fair, I think the negatives were there to start, but that's when A, we didn't really know them, and B, the refs were bringing balls up 50 or 60 yards and no one kind of knew what was going on. We felt like we nearly needed it, like the rugby, the referee talking to our ear telling us what was happening. But I think it has smoothed itself out, and we saw it right through the kind of All-Ireland campaign and then into the club game back here. It has smoothed itself out. Still probably need the requirement of two referees in the field to keep up with everything, but you know, it's funny that we're kind of getting into this chat off the cuff this evening, but we were kind of worried about it coming into the club game, Liam, when we were looking at it throughout the All-Ireland series and how would refs cope. But to be fair, between the club championships now and the county championship into Munster and districts, there is stories of different things happening in different games, but overall it's coped fairly well into the club game, hasn't it?
It has coped very well, and I think the main positive out of this, the whole thing, is the game is a way more enjoyable for the supporter. No, mm-hmm. Because it was dying on its feet. People weren't going to watch the game. But this year, with the new rules, the whole thing has turned on its head. But definitely, we said at the start of the year, it's going to be hard for referees, the club, but they have gone out and they have done well. Like, but I can see it now, even standing at the goalpost. It's a hard game to ref now, Ivan.
Yeah.
No, it's a lively game. No, and plus you have 100 rules inside your head. You're trying to watch everything. You have one man, one set of eyes, and he's trying to watch everything. Really, no. So it is the game is a hard game. No, it's a riff.
A couple of pairs of eyes needed, I think.
Yeah.
Before we just leave the districts, and we need to go for a break as well, lads. Just quickly, I suppose. Liam, the O'Donoghue Cup final next weekend, the big one, Fitzgerald Stadium, Rathmore against Crokes. I know we kind of dipped into all these last week, but now we're kind of a week out. That's sure to be a cracker in Killarney, and then we've got a cracking South Kerry final as well, plus the North Kerry replay.
North Kerry, yeah.
There's a lot going on next weekend.
Yeah, there's huge football on next weekend. It's a pity they're all on the same day, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, the O'Donoghue Cup, always a big occasion, a very sought after medal, and Rathmore and Crokes, never anything between them. Especially like Rathmore have a good record against Crokes in O'Donoghue Cups in the last number of years. Mm. No, and they won't fear Crokes coming into it. But the one thing I see this year, since Crokes have been kind of, it's the only thing Crokes had to play for in the last number of weeks. Mm. No, they have no sideshows of Munster campaigns or anything like that. And I'm sure Pat Shea and the management team will be up for this. There'll be nothing held back, but it's going to be a humdinger, because like I said, there's never anything between these two teams.
Absolutely. Then down in South Kerry, John, you've St Mary's and Skellig Rangers. That's always a fiery enough encounter, and the South Kerry final is always another kind of glitz and glamour sort of event below in South Kerry as well, so everyone looking forward to that down there.
Yeah, the Mary's, the town team, you know, they're comfortable winning against St Michael's final, more in the semi-final. Skellig Rangers, a tough game with Waterville, double scores in the end, 10-5. A lot of talk about, you know, Brian Sheehan, will he get that 16th South Kerry Championship medal? Farm goes out the window for finals, but Mary's will be favourites going into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to forget, as our lovely producer Niamh has reminded us, Cremorne, of course, taking on Cavan Gaels. That's in the ladies' junior club, or the All-Ireland Series junior semi-final. That's on Saturday at 1 o'clock in Terry Coyle Park in Cavan. The All-Ireland semi-final, so a big one for them. Of course, we had a couple of those girls on after winning the Munster title as well, so best look to the Cremorne ladies as well this coming weekend. We'll take a break, plenty more to come on our football chat in the next 10 minutes or so. 083 300 3300, text or WhatsApp there, or give a call 066 712 3666.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry,
brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
Yeah, you're welcome back to the programme. So a couple of more bits in around the GA circles in the county. Liam Brosson, Peter Twist this week up on social media and papers and everything else, saying that the minor changes haven't worked. It is time to revert back to under 18 and to Croke Park finals.
Yeah. John and myself here, we're delighted to hear that, because we were preaching it a long time. No, it should have never been changed, Ivan, in the first place. Never been changed. We've seen it, even at the All-Ireland Senior Finals, the day has kind of taken the air out of it a small bit. The minors, there was always a great buzz, you know, before it. You know, there was something to watch. When you go into Croke Park now, you're just waiting, you're just looking out into an empty field. No, it's a massive loss for that day alone. But not only for the minor players themselves. Like, we're going to district competitions now, and we're looking out and we're saying, that fellow was a Kerry minor, this fellow was a Kerry minor. You're picking out the Kerry minors. But like, they deserve their day in Croke Park.
Yeah.
You know, I go back to my own time, and John was involved, when John was around playing as well. No, when you're a young fella, that's where you want to play. And when you actually put on the green and gold, and to be honest, the Kerry minor jersey is probably your first proper green and gold jersey. I know there's development squads and all that, but when you become a Kerry minor, you're on the trend in, really. And I think when you actually get into Munster finals and you play them, we used to play them in front in Killarney, in front of Kerry or Clare. I think the year we won it, it was Kerry and Clare above in Partnacieve that we played in front of. You know, so it was they're huge days for families and everything. And I'm delighted I was getting a bit of airtime, and something has to be done about it, because it's not right for the minor, I think. And plus, you're going to lose players. It's a massive attraction as well.
We watched a couple of matches here on Monday nights for involving the minors here and listening in and everything else, which is just, it just doesn't seem right, John. And you know, it's been a lot of talk the last couple of weeks here. Shane Ryan was talking about it as well, playing, and Meade during the week, and also they were changing their clubs back to under 18. So how much more pressure needs to go on Croke Park to kind of get this back up, back up and running? Obviously the Croke Park, and there's people will discuss about getting tickets for the minor final if your county isn't in the senior, and there's all that sort of talk. Maybe we look at putting it on maybe before semi-final day, which are huge attendances now, 50 or 60,000 at the semi-finals as well. You know, there's probably certain ways you could look at it, but getting it back to under 18 from 17 is very important as well, isn't it?
Very important. I think, you know, they're still young lads, they're still children really at under 17. That year is an awful difference, physical development, mental strength. We've said it from day one. Liam said something there about playing. You know, I've seen both sides of it in a Kerry senior dressing room, and God, we go to Mico and the lads, they'd come in Kerry after winning. That was a real boost to lads inside. You had one up already for the green and gold, you know. And in the other flip side, you were outside before, and these seniors are going out, your idols are going on for these young lads, and you get into Croke Park, no question in my mind, two semi-finals should be curtain raisers. The All-Ireland final, curtain raiser, the senior final. This nonsense about not exposing these young lads to that pressure. Well, I know, there could be seniors the following year. You get them out in Croke Park, it's the place you want to play. For families, some players go on to play under 21, and more play senior, and more don't play again. But the common denominator is, you were in Croke Park, an All-Ireland semi-final or final day, one of the greatest stadiums in the world, and that's something special. It should be brought back, no question or doubt about it, and I think that the under 18s, it should be reverted from 17 to 18.
And it's a huge day for the family. It's absolutely a huge day for the clubs. We all remember going to Croke Park watching players out of our own club, but you deliberately to go up to watch them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we lost that for years, so I'm just hoping that it will be changed, because there is a void there at the moment, you know, even for All-Ireland final days. And I think, plus, you we're on about your young players going to Australia and all, like, if you can give them that little bit of taste of what it's like to play in an All-Ireland final or before a senior All-Ireland final, and the crowds and the buzz and the build up and everything, it might entice them. Maybe I want to stay at this.
Yeah.
You know, I know we've played in All-Ireland finals last year above in Portlaoice. No, it's still not the same. It should be above Croke Park.
No, it should be.
Played one game against Tyrone was in Newbridge last year as well.
Newbridge, so
again, you're in decent county grounds, and nothing wrong with them, but you want to be in the on the biggest stage.
I think this is great by Peter Twiss, coming from Kerry, one of the premier counties.
Exactly.
But it's the powers that be in Croke Park. We've said it for quite some time. It's not that we know it all. We're listening to the grassroots. There's a huge divide coming between Croke Park and the grassroots.
Absolutely.
Huge divide. And I think this is one out to turn it over. They'll find it very difficult to do it, because when they make decisions above in Croke Park,
they don't like
going back. But I think there's going to be huge pressure coming on from all over. I think the Waterford minor hurling manager came out even after they winning the All-Ireland, that it should be in Croke Park. That's where you want to be.
Yeah, and hopefully the message will ring clear. We'll quickly move on, as I'm conscious of time. B teams in the County League are no more. Liam Brosson, discuss.
Yeah, it was a funny enough one, to be honest. I suppose John didn't know more about it than what I would, but I thought it was something that could have stayed. I didn't see any harm in it, to be fair. I know Crokes were strong for a couple of years. All right, they came up along. No, I suppose it can be manipulated at times. All right, you know, teams are playing Saturday night and they're playing next, and they're playing against Sunday. You know, but if they can do away with that, I think you'd have a very good competition. You know, so we'll see for a year anyway. But like I said, John has been meeting him down through the years, so he's probably the expert in that.
Might be better. But I'll tell you how it worked in hurling, because I played B hurling for a lot at junior championships and stuff. I was never great for senior, but you had to name your kind of first 15, and those 15 players definitely couldn't play for the junior panel. And if you represented your club at senior level, you couldn't play. So it was kind of a game, if you came on for the senior side, you couldn't. But if you were an unused sub, you could play for the B team. Would that have been maybe be a better idea for the county league.
And I think in general, Ivan, that's the way it worked over the last number of years. You know, Division 5, there'd be 6 or 7 or 8 senior clubs, we'd call them, and then you'd have 5 or 6 or 7 of B teams. But I found that, you know, you're speaking before the game, you'd know the faces, 2 or 3 lads, whether it would be Glenn Flisk or Guinea Gilla, Brett Moore, Austin Stacks, Lawn Rangers, you know, Dr. Crokes. These guys, they had their bag of jerseys, they had their footballs, they had their squad. And this up and down was gone, really. And
a separate team, you know, really,
and it was great. It was great to be going in playing these, because they played some great football. Mm-hmm. And I thought the county leagues were going really well, being honest with you. You know, if you weren't good enough for the division you were in, you were relegated. It was competitive. If you were gone from 5, you went to 6. You had a chance of coming up from 6 to 5. But now it appears that, you know, 5, you can't be relegated. 6, you can't be promoted. You look at the kind of a farcical situation. Dr. Crokes, 11 games unbeaten in Division 5. The carrot was to go to Division 4, but now they're back in 6. I'm not so sure. And you know, it was always, motions are well thought out, and the Lisboa club moved that motion for a reason, to be fair, and it was voted on. It's not Lisboa's fault, it's the clubs that voted, you know. Some have come out since giving out about it, but they had the chance to vote for it.
Yeah.
And they didn't vote.
I thought he'd be happy that Asti were in Division 5. He's at that none anyway. Finally, lads, the new Kerry jersey came out during the week. There's been a sort of a mixed bag of commentary. I think a lot of people outside the county did you, but it seems to have gone down well inside the county, Liam. You're a good man to have jerseys hanging up on your wall and everything else. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I'll hold my judgment really till I see it properly on the field, Ivan. No, it's a darker green, obviously, darker gold. No, it looks okay. I wouldn't be a massive fan of it. But like I said, I'd like to see it on the field now first before I'd make a right decision on it. But look, it is different to the past Kerry jerseys. And I suppose marketing and for branding and stuff like that, it's a good change. You know, usually before, the jersey might only change a stripe or change or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a big change, all right. But I'll hold judgment now until January till we see it on the field.
Yeah, I think Liam's right there, John. I think that kind of seeing something different, it can be good or bad different, but kind of different nonetheless. And, you know, I think you want, as a consumer, you want kind of value for money if you're buying them for the kids and stuff and everything like that. Because if something isn't changing much year to year, A, you're probably not going to buy it. And B, you know, so it's probably, from a marketing point of view, there's probably more people going to buy it in the case that it's different.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll probably make up for the people who wouldn't buy it if it was kind of a similar jersey to last year, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the marketing thing. People will buy it. It's new, it's different. And as you say, it is different. And I'd agree with Liam. You know, I was speaking to a very good GM in Arkery during the week. What do you think of the jersey? He said, I don't care what shape or colour the jersey is, once we bring Sam down the road again next September. And I think that says it all. There'll be mixed views always. You'll have people that'll be for it, there'll have people that'll be against it, but that's human nature. But I think change, and when you want to market something and sell something, the bigger change, I think, the more attention you'll draw.
And that's the world we're in now, Ivan. Yep. You'd not see with Kerry FC, it's all about branding and marketing.
Yeah, and getting
you
know, it out
getting
there,
a few pound in for your jerseys and stuff like that. That's what keeps the whole thing going.
Yeah, and they're changing now every year. We're well used to that. That kind of idea of holding a jersey over 2 years is definitely gone. Just a couple of comments as before we let you go. Ivan, I agree with Liam, taking the minds out of Croke Park for Ireland finals, semi-finals and finals was a terrible decision. It's time to get back to the way it was and make minors under 18 again. It is huge. Huge motivation for young lads to play in Croke Park. That's from Charles. Thanks for that. Charles, was one more I wanted to get to here as well. Yeah, I think the referee was fantastic yesterday in the North Kerry final, and that one person complained about him. That's always great. And a shout out to the Valencia Young Islanders team of 2000, who are the centenary team at the South Kerry final on Saturday next. Lean years in the interim, but hope springs eternal. And finally, John, I think this one is against B&G from Ivan Tidings and SD. I said, well done to Arsenal yesterday for beating Tottenham by 4-1. Best thing was Liverpool and Man City dropping points. Might just be Arsenal's year. You don't want Arsenal to win it because you're a Chelsea fan. We're only down in 11th at the moment.
One thing I'd say to you, it's only November.
We're looking up instead of down at the moment.
Is there competitions for in the Premiership?
We'll be in the Conference League next year. Lads, thanks very much. We go for news at 7 o'clock.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
Breaking down the weekend's sporting action. This is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Yeah, you're welcome back to the second hour of Terrace Talk. It's Ivan Hurley with you until 8 o'clock this evening. As ever, you can get in touch with the programme 083 300 3300 on text or WhatsApp, or you can call 066 712 3666. Yeah, so this coming Saturday, it's the return of the Killarney Historic Rally, sponsored, of course, by the Killarney Towers Hotel. And this one taking place on Saturday, November 29th. Big ceremonial start on the Friday evening, as ever, inside in the town. So wrap up nice and warm with the woolly hats and everything else, and then on Saturday we're out rallying proper, 9 stages across the kind of Killarney Kinmare area. And the most exciting thing, I think, for me in looking at the timetable is the going down Mall's Gap, which is almost backwards, it feels, compared to what we're used to going up. We've one run up in the morning and then 2 runs down in the evening, one in the daylight, and then the old light pods are getting fitted and the rally cars are coming down Mall's Gap in the pitch darkness. It's plenty of excitement around it. Delighted to be joined on the line from Donegal is Rory Kennedy. He was last year's winning co-driver. We also have Killarney man Noel O'Sullivan, who's sitting beside a big name from the World Rally Championship over the last number of years, who's coming to Killarney for the event. We also have motorsport journalist Sean Moriarty in studio, and we'll be chatting to one of the main organisers of the event a little later on in the programme as well. Rory, I'm going to start with you. I was texting you yesterday, you were in New York, you're back in home in Donegal, and now you're going to be coming to Killarney. So you have a busy couple of days. I hope there'll be no jet lag by the time you get to Killarney on the weekend.
No, I hope not, Ivan. I hope not. No, the family, we had a family, some of my family live over there, and we're over for the weekend. We came back first thing this morning, so hopefully the jet lag will be well worn off come the weekend.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Look, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule for the week, Rory. Look, I suppose coming down as defending champions is always a nice one alongside Donaghkerry, of course, a name that a lot of people here in Kerry will recognise. Having the number one on the door, especially maybe in a town like Killarney, is always a nice one to have, and a bit of a bragging right, I imagine, coming into the weekend, and you'll be hoping it'll be on the door again next year, will you?
Oh, for sure. Aye, that's what it's all about for us. I've been fortunate to have had number one on the door for quite a lot of years on the Rally of the Lakes and the historic rally as well. And I have to say, like, going to Killarney and Kerry in particular is fantastic stages, and every year fantastic rally with the highest level of organisation. It's always a pleasure, and I can assure you one thing, to win a rally in Kerry, you'll know all about it, and it's not very easily done.
Yeah. Talk to me a small bit about the BMWs. There's been a lot of talk this week when the entry list came out of the sheer amount of BMWs, and there's a good bit of history dating back, I think, 30 plus years with your time at Bertie Fisher in BMWs in Killarney as well, and there's quite an entry of BMW M3s in the historic class.
Yeah, for sure. You know, if you go back the years, 35 years since Bertie and I won the Rally of the Lakes and the BMW M3 on... in 1990, I think it was, if memory serves me well, and it was an iconic car back then. It was a Toughmax supported car, sponsored car, and we won the rally, won the championship. In fact, it was the first international rally that Bertie and I won together, so very poignant from that point of view. I believe Chris Meek's car will be a replica of the car we had back in 1990, so that should be very interesting as well. But looking through the entry list there, Ivan, I think I'm open to correction. If Sean's there, Sean Moriarty, I'm open to correction. But I think I counted maybe 11 BMWs and the overall entry of 64 cars, and which is quite remarkable, really, when you think of the, you know, the Ford Mark II Escorts in Ireland down through the years, how popular they were, and now you find that the M3 is taking over. And I think that's due to the fact that, you know, it's down through the years, the M3 has been an iconic rally car. And now, as the historics, the Appendix K historic cars become more competitive, the M3 is the number one choice.
Is it kind of hard to believe, Rory, that, you know, you're in, that was the top spec machinery 35 years ago, and now it's kind of at the top end of the historic class? Obviously, for people that don't know, you won't see your normal cars you'd see, let's say, for the Rally at the Lakes down here in May for this rally. It's all the historic kind of class machinery. But is it kind of hard to believe in that 35 years that the time has gone by so quickly that these aren't at the top level anymore, but they are at the top level in the historic classes?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, Ivan. If you think, for me, anyway, personally speaking, like, my rally career's come full circle. You know, I was winning in Killarney in 1990 in the state-of-art BMW back in the day. That was the best rally car you could have gotten. And it was run by ProDrive and with the best team, best driver, best car, best tires. The whole combination was right. And I find now, here we are all these years later, that I find myself back in the same type of car, albeit in a different category, the historics. But nevertheless, they're one of my... in fact, it is my most favourite rally car. And I've been in quite a few down through the years, I can assure you. But M3 has always had a very... is always very my most favourite rally car I've ever been in. Done a lot of rallies, had a lot of success. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, rear-wheel drive, 300 brake horsepower. What more could you want? Heading up Mull's Gap, like, it's a fantastic combination.
Yeah, absolutely. Noel, I'm going to bring you in here, and you're welcome back to the programme. I think the last time I had you on was after you took the top step in Donegal in June. Obviously, sitting beside Chris Meek, such a huge name in your home rally, you must be fairly excited now for the bit of recce and into the action on Saturday as well.
Yeah, hi, lad. Thanks for having me on again, Ivan. Yeah, it's actually pretty much new territory for me doing the historic rally, as normally this time of year my season's kind of finished. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, when you get a call from Chris to go rallying in your hometown, it's very hard to say no. But yeah, for us really, like, to go into the M3 in Killarney in the greatest, you could say, the best historic rally there is, it's pretty special. It's all about having fun, really, for us. And yeah, look, the pressure will be on Rory and Donna to retain the number one on the door, and we'll just sit back and leave them go up Mull's Gap and take all the plaudits. But yeah, look, the entry is fantastic, and to the club put on it's four or five different stages, and there's a new route, you could say, with Mull's Gap, and with three kind of pretty much new stages for all the competitors, really. So it's it kind of makes a little bit level for the likes of Chris coming to Killarney, but yeah, look, it's to have the likes of these world drivers coming over, like Kelly last year. It's great for Irish rallying, and look, it's great for clubmen drivers and local drivers to kind of test themselves, I guess, against the likes of Chris and Kelly. So, yeah, it's all systems go now, and hopefully maybe the weather might stable up for the weekend, and it might leave us kind of a bit more in a better place, kind of starting into a new card, you know, trying to learn it straight away in a one-day rally.
I think I might have been deflecting a small bit saying that Donal Kelly is going to tear off Mull's Gap ahead of you, but all jokes aside, Noel, I mean, we know your success in the Irish Tarmac Championship, and in particular in your home rally of the Rally of the Lakes over the Maybank holiday, but how special would it be for you to win a historic rally in your hometown? It's probably one that's kind of, as you mentioned, is kind of in your off-season, so you haven't had a huge amount of chances to win it, but I think it'd be a nice trophy for you to have. What are you be? I think you'd cherish that one for a while if you could manage to pull it off come Saturday evening.
Yeah, definitely. Look, who knows? I suppose there's so many variables now with at the top level of the sport, with, say, if you'd done a test and a dry day and the weekend of the rally was raining. But look, myself and Chris are very competitive, I suppose, like everyone who starts a rally. But yeah, I suppose if we're in the mix, we'll definitely try to go for the top spot. But I suppose this rally is all about fun for us, and without Paul and a Hearns Motor Group, none of it would be possible. I suppose Paul and Chris, they're great friends, and I suppose when Chris got the phone call, it was a no-brainer to come back to Killarney and see what it has to offer. Especially, it's been so many years now since he competed here. I remember being a kid watching Chris here competing, and yeah, it's great to have him back. But look, I suppose we're winning even to get the chance to go up Mull's Gap in these cars, and look, winning the rally is only a bonus at the end of the day once we all have a bit of fun and everyone gets home safe.
Yeah, and I think that obviously that's the most important part of the weekend, Noel, but it is sort of seen as sort of a Christmas get-together for a lot of lads from around the country and beyond, kind of do come back to Killarney, and the historic rally does seem to be kind of a weekend of festivities around the town as well, and it's kind of a nice, I know it's kind of the start of the season for the 2026 historic championship, but in general a lot of people use Killarney as sort of an almost a Christmas party sort of a weekend, so there's that sort of nice element of the social side of the rally as well.
Yeah, definitely. Myself and Chris will be coming to Killarney to wind down. It'll be an end-of-year wind-down rather than wind-up. But look, it opens Christmas in Killarney as well with your parade, etc. happening on the Saturday. So for me, it was always the start of Christmas when I was growing up to have the historic rally coming. And yeah, we're just lucky to have these drivers coming to Killarney each year, each December, that we can look forward to a top-draw rally at the end of the year and have it on our calendar.
Absolutely. Rory, before I let you go, just one more to you. I'm going to ask you about coming down Miles Gap, because it hasn't been ran in quite a number of years, and in particular in the cover of darkness as well. We know what a test Miles Gap is going up. It's talked about kind of the world over, really. But from your experience when you were doing it years ago and coming down the gap, I'm sure it's a different test coming down.
Yeah, you're right, Ivan. It's a different test entirely coming down. You know, it's a very, Miles Gap's a very specialist bit of road, and we've been doing that for many, many years, and many drivers in the country now know Miles Gap, you know every single bump and every dip on it, and, you know, when you go up it. But coming down will be a bit of an unknown quantity, and I believe they're using the full-length version of it as well, which is quite interesting, you know. But we shouldn't, you know, we're Noel and I, and we're talking about Chris and Donna, but we shouldn't forget as well, like Rob Duggan's there. And Rob Duggan's a very, very competent driver in Killarney, and particularly in Miles Gap. And when he gets three goes at Miles Gap, I can tell you, he'll be a hard man to beat too. So, look, we've done Miles Gap in daylight and the dark coming down the way. And I even remember back to 1990, the last days of the rally was down Miles Gap, and it came all the way down as well. So, look, it's going to be very interesting, and fair play to the organisers for taking the initiative to do this. You know, it's one of the few rallies left in Ireland that you have night stages on, and like that's what the drivers want, you know, a good bit of variety and something different. And, you know, fortunately, Killarney District Motor Club have taken us on board and have provided us with a superb rally. Noel says one of the best historic rallies, certainly on these shores, and everybody's looking forward to it, and, you know, there's going to be huge anticipation again as to who's going to be quickest over the gap.
Absolutely. And look, to yourself, Rory, and to Noel, the very best of luck to ye and the full field of, I think, nearly 160 cars the weekend, and hopefully everyone comes home safe and sound after a fantastic day's motorsport next Saturday in Killarney. But Noel and to Rory, thanks very much for joining us this evening to look ahead to it.
Thanks, Ivan.
That's Noel O'Sullivan there and Rory Kennedy, two co-drivers who'll be first and second on the road in the historic class. And of course we've got the modified as well, so fantastic days riding next Saturday in Killarney. We'll be chatting to the chief organiser, that's Anthony O'Connor, and our resident motorsport journalist Sean Moriarty about the rally after this quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry,
sponsored by Meadowlands Hotel Tralee.
Hey, welcome back to Terrace Talk. We're in the midst of our chat about the Killarney Towers Hotel Historic Rally, which is taking place in between Killarney and Kinmare on Saturday. Sean Moriarty has popped into studio to us now. Sean, you're welcome back to the programme, first of all. I suppose the week of a rally in journalism terms is probably the busiest part of the whole build-up, but this one always gets some great coverage, and it's one that a lot do look forward to from both here at home and abroad.
Yeah, I suppose, Ivan, thanks for having us on again, but it's like in this season again, but this rally always seems to throw up some incredible stories and incredible little tales and yarns connected with the whole event. Obviously, Noel spoke there about Chris Meek coming. It's great to have a driver of his calibre coming to the event. But, you know, the history with Chris and Paul Nagel, five World Rally Championship wins in their career. And this rally was founded by the late, great Maurice Nagel back in 29 years ago. And Chris and Maurice were very, very good friends. And I know Noel mentioned that it was Paul Ahern from the Ahern's Motor Group that made this happen. But a lot of the reasons Chris wanted to come was because of his great friendship with Maurice Nagel, the man that invented this rally, if you like. So that's a very important part of the whole Chris Meek coming to Killarney story. There's the great Belgian connection as well. Like, and it's amazing. You go back into the early days of the Rally of the Lakes, and there used to be a restaurant at the top of New Street in Killarney called Gaby's Restaurant. And the man that owned that restaurant had two loves in his life, if you like, and they were cycling and rallying. And he always encouraged Belgian teams to do Irish cycling events, and particularly Killarney rallying. So the Belgium connection with Killarney Rally goes back to the 1984, 1985, that far back. Mm-hmm. And to have someone like Patrick Snyers, former European champion, multiple Belgium rally champion, actually competing in his first ever timed rally in the Republic of Ireland is incredible. He's been here for Rally Masters, he's been here for a couple of the Deja Vu events, and he's done events in Northern Ireland, but this is his first ever rally, would you believe, in the Republic of Ireland. And it kind of maintains that whole Belgium connection with the rally from day one. Got to mention Rob Duggan as well, local hero. He's out in a historic rally car. He won the historic event in 2019 against the late Craig Breen. shows the caliber of driver he is in the main overall category. He's the defending modified champion, but moves into the historic category for only the second time this year. And with his long term, his great man beside him, Ger Conway, and they'll be there or thereabouts. It's also, you have to look at your overall sponsor there, the O'Donoghue Ring Group, and Alan Ring's out in a brand new Group A in Pretza. And this is a sign of the times, where you spoke to Rory Kennedy earlier, how the how the BMW was the car of choice 30 years ago and it moved on. But as the historic regulations move on, we're moving into Group A territory now as well. And Alan's going to debut a brand new Impreza there, and he'll be no slouch up the gap on Saturday morning. So there's all these great little stories that are connected with the rally that this time of year, as you say, you're never short of a yarn or two to fill a few pages.
Absolutely. Well, we're also joined by the clerk of the course on the line, because he's very, very busy. We wouldn't get him to come all the way over to Tralee this evening and the week of the rally, but Anthony O'Connor is on the line. Anthony, thanks very much for taking the time out of that busy schedule. You might just give us kind of a small bit of a rundown, I suppose, of the event and where people might be able to see it. I know you've got the event programme on sale, so we don't want to give too much away, but maybe there's a rough guide for people out and about who might be out and about Saturday and might want to come across it.
Ivan, good evening, and good evening Shawnee and Noel there and Rory. Good evening to you all. Thank you very much, Ivan and Radio Kerry, for having us on this evening. It's great to get a bit of PR from the local radio station. So I suppose, look, to get into the event on Friday evening, we have some early start in Collis Street in Killarney. So anyone that wants to get up close and personal with the cars before they head out on the stages on Saturday morning is more than welcome to come into town on Friday evening. And on Saturday morning, we will be heading up Miles Gap. We'll stop in Gortamullen Business Park for our service. And we leave there and we have a loop of three stages in Kinmare, back into service again. We will go out and repeat that loop of stages once more and back into service before the competitors will take on Miles Gap in reverse. And they come back down to the finish line of Miles Gap and back around to Kinmare and get ready for the night stage, put on their lighting pods, etc. And they'll rally Miles Gap in the dark home to the finish, which will be in front of the Killarney Plaza Hotel, which will coincide with the Christmas in Killarney parade. So hopefully the spectators will make it back into town again to cheer on the winners. And as Shawnee alluded to there, we have fierce competition this year between the likes of Rob Duggan and Donna Kelly, and Chris is thrown into the mix as well, and Alan Ring with his new Group A car. So it's going to be very interesting, I suppose. The one word of advice I have for anybody that's intending to travel to go spectating is to get into the stages early, to work with the marshals that are on the locations where they're spectating, and just be mindful of your surroundings and be safe out there, because we just need to try and get all our stages up and running in time, because we're running on such a tight schedule to run 9 stages. So any delays on the stages trying to move spectators out of where they shouldn't be just hampers the whole event, and it could mean that we might lose a stage. We might be down to 8 stages. So, you know, Ivan, look, you have a lot of rallying done yourself, and you know how important it is to stay safe out there. And I suppose the other message that I would like to get across, and this is coming from both myself and the Roads Policing Unit in Castle Island, is to please keep the race in its place. Let the rallying up to the rally drivers inside and close roads. And anybody that's coming to spectate, I would appeal to anybody to just obey the rules of the road and drive to the rules of the road and respect the residents along the stages, because without those residents allowing us close down their roads for a number of hours, we wouldn't be able to go out rallying. And I thank the people of Kinmare and Miles Gap and Killarney for allowing us to go out and use their roads for our enjoyment.
Yeah, most definitely. Just Anthony, sometimes these rallies can be the victims of their own success with the crowds, but it is great for the town that there will be a massive crowd down for the event the weekend, and it has been building over the last couple of years, kind of building up again. You're seeing these kind of world rally drivers coming to take it on now and everything. So it's a testament to, I suppose, the club and everyone involved to what the rally has become. But like you say, big crowds expected, so just everyone to be nice and orderly, take your time and everything else, get into the stages, and you'll see some great action, especially if you're up Miles Gap, I'd imagine, with the three runnings.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose, look, we're very fortunate. We've a club in Killarney with 200 plus members in it. And without everybody putting their shoulder to the wheel to get the event up off the ground, I just can't run the event all on my own. It takes a huge team and a huge team of volunteers, which will be upwards of 200 people on the day volunteering for the whole day so that the event will run safely and everybody will enjoy the event. And I suppose as I'm on that, I'm probably very fortunate as well with my employer, Mike and Max Moriarty in Central Cartels in Fannanford. Without their goodwill, I probably wouldn't be running the event either, because at the end of the day, I do some garage work, and with the last 3 weeks is about 75% rally work. So I'm just very, very fortunate to be able to do that, Ivan.
Absolutely. Look, Anthony, continued success and best of luck on Saturday at all of you. Shawnee, before we finish up, there's a couple more people to mention, but I did want to get the Spanish connection in the modified. It's very strange to see Spain written on an entry list for an Irish rally, isn't it?
It's actually the first time ever that there's a Spanish entry on the entry list for the Killarney Historic Rally, and there's a very little interesting tale connected with these guys as well. Of course there is, but he's car number 120 is Daniel Alonso Villarón from Asturias in Spain. He's just after finishing the RSE rally in England this weekend, and quite the adventure they had over there. But I think the name, the hint is in the second name, Daniel Alonso Villarón. He's actually an uncle of the World Formula 1 champion Fernando Alonso. So it's great to have someone like that coming to Irish rallying. First ever Spanish entry in Killarney. 20 years since we had a Spanish driver in any rally, so it's great to see him here. Anthony mentioned too the ceremonial start on Saturday evening, but there's an invite to all Radio Kerry listeners now that there's another event at 3 p.m. in Castle Island in Ahern's BMW showroom in Castle Island. Chris Meek will be on site. He will be there to unveil his car ahead of the rally. It's a quick meet and greet with the fans, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. on
Friday, isn't it?
On Friday before the rally, so all are welcome to attend there, and we look forward to seeing you all out and about in Killarney and Kinmare. Oh, there's a new media zone in Kinmare as well that I forgot to mention. 3 p.m. on Saturday, meet the drivers outside the Atlantic Bar in Kinmare for a quick meet and greet there as well. So we'll see you all over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can't make it to Killarney, I'll be out and about stages giving the reports. I think 8 or 9 reports out today, which is huge coverage. So you won't miss a beat of the action. To Sean, to Anthony, to Rory, and to Noel, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We have to take a break, and we'll be chatting athletics after this quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
Now you're welcome back to Terrace Talk, and if we think rallying is out and about in the countryside and everything else, well, I think cross-country running most definitely is. And we found a Kerry cross-country runner by the name of Niamh O'Sullivan, a Masters runner running out of Unreacht Athletic Club, and she's thankfully popped into the studio. Niamh, you're welcome along first and foremost, and we might get into a small bit about the recent trip to the UK and everything else, but cross-country running, I'm only saying to Niamh that I saw it on the news last night. They were showing the Irish championships that were held up north, but for the listener maybe who's used to hearing about, you know, running on the track, and there's kind of the marathon running and what we might be used to seeing in the Olympics more and more, tell us a small bit about cross-country running and what's all involved in it.
Cross country. First of all, Ivan, thanks very much for having me on. And sure. My partner and my teammate, Sharon Cahill, unfortunately couldn't make it tonight, but she was very appreciative of the invitation, as myself. But yes, cross country is definitely very different. And we Leeds, Derry yesterday, a lot of fabulous races and everything up there in appalling conditions. And Leeds last weekend was appalling conditions. So a little bit different. Definitely the indoors are very, very popular this time of the year, and marvellous track facilities as well. We're very lucky in Kerry to have great tracks. And but it is that bit different. But it's a marvellous, I suppose, sport, and something that we as the Irish are particularly strong at. European cross country now coming up in a few weeks' time, and it's something that we've always excelled at right down to grassroots level. So Kerry would have very, very strong representation in cross country, mm-hmm. and that was very obvious from underage yesterday right up to seniors and masters and that as well. So great to see.
Yeah, it is, and I'd say you're constantly washing shoes and everything else after.
My washing machine never stops going. Definitely not for the last few weeks anyway.
I can imagine. obviously we've had masters athletes here in the past and in different kind of sports and different grades and everything else. We were just chatting a small bit off air there as well about kind of how it's split up and gives everybody sort of a chance to, you know, through the age groups of it and everything else. And I'd say there's just a huge amount of masters athletes now. And I'd imagine since COVID as well, a lot of people might have kind of maybe gone back to it or taken it back up or maybe said we'll give this thing a go again or whatever else. There has been kind of resurgence in masters level sport, especially in athletics.
Oh, huge. Absolutely. I suppose it's ageing population as well too. And you're definitely right, during COVID, and I must compliment the park running group as well too. The whole organisation has really, I think, opened up running to everybody at all levels. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a winner with the time it's on, 9:30 on Saturday morning. Everybody gets out of bed, done, dusted, and it's extremely sociable. And Athletics Ireland do a marvellous job as well too. And I must say, you know, the county board here, Athletics Ireland, you know, I suppose it's been very, very strong. It's very committed, hugely dedicated group. So promotion of that again would be huge. But yes, like masters is really, unlike golf, masters is from the age of 35 upwards. Mm. Seniors is from the age of 18 onwards until you can keep going basically at that level. But it's hugely competitive. Like even yesterday in Derry, like some of the competitors over 35, 40, 45 would still be running very, very well in senior. And it's from that background, probably Kim myself and Sharon as well too, and it keeps your interest going. But the great thing is that at whatever level you're at, you can always run masters, absolutely, whether it's road, whether it's cross country, there's a door open there for you always. And starting late is not a problem. Sometimes you're coming in fresher, maybe from background of football, it could be basketball or nothing at all. Very, very easy to convert.
It is nice because we hear, I know the Kerry Masters football team are going well in their competitions as well, but it is nice to see kind of more and more with the, I suppose, you know, what would you say, kind of the letting kind of the Masters athletes kind of have a competition to kind of go in and still be sort of competitive with those kind of, you know, the aged around you or whatever else, as opposed to, you know, see maybe soccer players having to retire when they're, you know, mid to late 30s or whatever else. But you can kind of, this can kind of stay going forever, and you can kind of, as long as you're fit and healthy, you can stay going, which is important to keep people in sport and kind of keep that fitness through the later years of your life as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think the key there is to stay injury free. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key really in masters running. And sometimes then, you know, cross training might combine it, say, like Sharon does a lot with cycling, swimming, whatever. And maybe you train differently. You got to be more clever in your training. You have to do a lot more strength work. And I think surface is huge. I think cross country is absolutely brilliant. Usually what takes us out from running is things like our knees and our backs and things like that. And I think running on the softer surfaces gives you a huge amount of strength and stamina for other activities as well. Mm-hmm. And it definitely does prolong your athletic career.
What does your training kind of consist of for the cross country? Are you kind of, I can just imagine now you're running through fields around Tralee or something like that and jumping over fences and all that kind of thing. But what's involved kind of week to week for yourself at, you know, at this age now when you're still competing in the Masters athletics? What kind of is your average training kind of regime during the week, or do you kind of take it as day by day what kind of happens, or if there's something else on in the day, or what keeps you going and be able to compete at that level?
It would be very structured, and to be honest, since I ran as a junior, as a senior, whatever, it doesn't really change. I mean, we're all totally committed to what we're doing. It's very structured. You know exactly what you're going. You have your season, you have your cross-country season, your road season, whatever, and you plan ahead. So generally, we've a very good training group that meet actually on a Tuesday morning. We'll be there tomorrow morning in the muck, whatever. And we use Brendan's Field, the Residents Association. They're fantastic to us and give us access to the field there. And when you go to places like Leeds and Derry and that as well, I think we're very lucky. We train the conditions that we have here. We train on the grass, we train on, you know, the muck. We're well used to it. Mm-hmm. I found even a lot in when we went to Leeds that time as well, and a lot of them, because the conditions were so bad, they trained on the road. And it's too much of a transition then to actually come and train on the surfaces. What does a week comprise of? A long run, usually, depending on the level of the person, but we'd usually be anything between, you know, kind of 15, 20k, whatever. Trying to do as much of that on grass as you can at this time of the year, because obviously, like I said earlier there, if you're going to race in it, you need to train it as well. You have to get used to those conditions.
Yeah. I'd imagine from kind of a, you know, sport kind of point of view, the wet grass, it must be hard to run on that kind of, you know, sludgy sort of ground now this time of year. I know from being around football and GA pitches that, you know, it's almost hard to kind of get the start of the run going, maybe, or it's kind of hard to kind of describe it. But, you know, do you find it tough running on sort of grass? Obviously, a sealed road surface is kind of the same all year round. It might be damp or it might be dry or whatever else, but the grass, when it gets wet, is it sticky is kind of the wrong word. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but do you find it hard to run on the grass? And it's obviously very good training then for when you do go into a wet event as well.
Actually, I love the muck, because the super shoes don't make a difference. When you're out on the road, everybody's got super shoes and they're flying literally, but when you're in the muck, it's down to, you know, brass tracks literally. Everybody's in the same boat literally, and you need a lot more strength work, definitely. When you're coming up a hill, like we came up in Leeds last week, or like they were trying to stay up on their feet in Derry yesterday, you need a lot of strength work. And you need a lot of speed work as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing about Masters winning, for some reason, is they shortened the distances. Like over in the UK now, in Leeds, we ran 6K. And then, say, National Masters here would be 4K. And take that even a park run is 5K, 4K is very short.
Yeah.
So you do need, and one thing about Masters really is it's very easy just to keep running miles. You need to run fast, you need to do speed sessions, you need to do strength work. So it's probably even just, if not more structured than you are as a senior, you've just got to cover those options and that as well, and making sure that you're ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, most definitely. Talk to me a small bit about the event in Leeds. It was the British and Irish Masters. You came home with a silver medal. It wasn't your first medal, but always probably nice to still go out and be able to win and to be able to compete at your level in the Masters, and kind of aiming for, you know, probably watching how you get on there and maybe going to the European Championships then, kind of knowing who might be there or whatever else. But it's always nice to come home, I imagine, with a medal in your back pocket.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the incentive that drives you on. And I knew we had a very strong team going out. Sharon was absolutely flying. Kay Byrne, Finn Valley and Maura Durvin Mullingar. We had a very, very good strong team, the four of us. And actually, it just came down to the wires. So the lady who beat me, Claire Elms, she's about 6 world records at the moment. So
wow.
Hopefully we'll nail her in the next few years. Anyway.
You might get a couple of world records off her.
And I was second, Kay Byrne was third, and it was actually Sharon's placing that actually nailed it for us. Otherwise, it was very, very close with the English team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing I love about cross country, is that every single place matters. So you've got your individual, I suppose, positioning, you've got your category team, you've got the full team, men's and ladies combined.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're second last or you can get one place up, it's totally inclusive. Everybody is placing. Makes a difference, and that's really, really special, because athletics can be very, very, I suppose, individual sports really. Cross country is so, so different.
Yeah.
The place counts, it's totally inclusive.
And when you go out to these events, are you kind of looking at you know, when you're looking at the you know, the cross country events and the athletes that are taking part in it, you know, the fact that it's kind of, it's done by age, do you often kind of be up against the same people from the different countries, but kind of the same athletes? A lot of time, obviously, just probably getting picked for the teams and everything else, but you probably know a lot of the runners from the likes of the English team and everything else, and you probably know what you're coming up against going to these events, do you?
Oh, absolutely, and the camaraderie is huge. I mean, Claire Elms, I met her that evening, and we had a great chat. Fiona Matt's another Scottish girl that usually, you know, would be right up there as well, and we're in contact all the time. I'd be with Fiona and that as well, and lots of other people, but there's a huge camaraderie there. I mean, like, mm-hmm. you're blood and guts out in the course, and everybody's going for the line, but afterwards, and that's the one fabulous thing about Masters running particularly, you have, I suppose you appreciate it more. Absolutely. But, oh yeah, every team is the same. You know who's there. You're watching their rankings. You know, you know where you're at and that kind of thing as well. But, you know, it's one thing, you're always striving. And people think as you get older, it gets easier. You know, oh, sure, it's much easier now. You're into over 50s, over 40s, over 60s, whatever it is. It actually gets more elitist, because a lot of these people running are previous Olympians or European Championships or whatever, and I've just kept it into the sport. Other people then have come in at a later age, much fresher in the legs, haven't got the years
yeah.
that we have in there, so it comes from different angles.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how it works out. Niamh, I'm just conscious of time, so just finally, I suppose, what's kind of the plan for the next couple of months? You mentioned you're heading to out to Portugal as well, so what's on the calendar over the next couple of months?
That's the other side of what I do. I love coaching as well too, so I've been involved with European Cross Country under 23 ladies for the last 6 years, so I'm delighted to accept the team lead position as well too.
Yeah, fantastic.
In Portugal just in a few weeks' time. And then Sharon then has big aims for another Ironman. She's done six Ironman and over the last few years, and she's aiming for a big one now in Portugal next October. So she's class act, absolutely. So usually she cycles in and does. We do the session tomorrow morning. She's probably cycled for about an hour beforehand. So she's got big aims for 2026. And I'd love to improve my standings in cross country, maybe on 10K on the road as well. But the coaching as well too, I really enjoy. And that would be another part coming forward. Hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll have a very good Irish representation in Portugal.
Yeah, it's great to stay involved. Look, Niamh, continued success. And to Sharon as well, what we might do is maybe even next summer, we might get both of you in and see and catch up to see where you are. And maybe if you've got those couple of world records beaten and everything else. But Niamh, thanks very much for popping in just this evening.
No,
an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll be going from cross-country running to powerlifting, would you believe it, after this quick break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
Yeah, you're welcome back to the final part of Terrace Talk, and we're moving on to powerlifting because Kerry has a new national champion in the sport. Delighted to be joined on the line by Castle Island's Darren Maloney. Darren, you're very welcome to Terrace Talk. Massive congratulations. Tell me a small bit how you went about to win the gold.
Thank you very much. Cheers for having me on. So, it was last weekend when I had the national championships. And I suppose it's probably about 10 years in the making of leading up to that comp. So I was at that comp this time last year and came second. And then made a few adjustments and so on this year and came back to win first, which was really, really special.
Talk to me a small bit about when I think of powerlifting, I'm thinking Olympics and watch it, and it's kind of a case of where it's one of those sports where if I can lift this, I'm going to win gold, sort of a thing. There's not sort of a waiting or whatever, as it's sort of like you're kind of looking at it and you might be saying, if I can do this, I'll win gold. It, you know, do you have that sort of mentality when you're going up to a bar and kind of saying, this is the moment, if I can do this last one, I'll be Irish champion? Is that how you kind of look at things?
A little bit. So, it is quite a black and white sport in terms of, you know, versus bodybuilding and other things that are very much judged on looks and things. It's very much, okay, this is the number you lifted, you either got it or you didn't kind of thing. So, with regards to, me going into this comp, you would have a pretty good idea of what your competitors are going to hit, but at the same time, you don't know until the day kind of comes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, luckily for me, I hit my second or third last lift of the day, and I kind of knew then from looking at the board that I'd come first, but I did put it out of my head to an extent just to keep a bit of a competitive edge because I didn't want to leave the foot off the gas too early either, you know.
You were second last year in the silver, so you kind of went away and came back to it again and came back for the gold. That must always be a good feeling of kind of being a runner-up to someone else. And I know sport people are competitive and you always kind of want to be the best. So it's always a nice feeling to kind of come runner-up maybe first and then come back and get the top honours. That's always a nice feeling in sport.
Yeah, 100%. I was actually thinking that myself going into this year. Like last year, obviously it would have been lovely to get the gold, but it felt all the more worthwhile this year getting it after last year being almost like a warm-up to it, shall we say. So, it did make it a lot more special this year going into it. And given this was my second nationals, I kind of knew a bit more of what I was facing into in terms of the competitive level that was there by other people who were up against me. Because it is quite literally the best lifters in the country for it, and it's invite only. So it's a pleasure just to be on the platform with them. But
yeah,
it did make it quite special coming back after last year to recover it this year, 12 months later, yeah.
Talk to me some more about the training, because you can't deadlift 302 kg, bench 125 and squat 240 without some time in the gym, I'd imagine, Darren. So talk to me some more about kind of the training. Obviously you say it's kind of a 10 year sort of a plan and build up and everything else, but what does a week or a day in the life of Darren Maloney look like when he's training full tilt for these championships?
Yeah, so an average week, normally in the past, would have been kind of 4 to 5 days of training for me. Given this year I became a dad, that came down to kind of 3, maybe 4. So I did have to adjust things, obviously, based on that. But usually it'll be kind of 3 to 4 days training a week. Every session will involve at least one of the three lifts maybe two, so squat, bench and deadlift for the three. And it'll vary day to day based on the strength of the day, really. So, like, in terms of me peaking for a comp, let's say the last 12 weeks leading up to that, it'll start off quite light. Like, we work everything up percentages. So we'll figure out what my max lift was last year, let's say. Then start off 12 weeks out, like 75% of that, and each week build a couple of percent at a time. And just gives you time to adjust it and so on as you're moving in closer to comp and let the body adapt. But usually it's kind of 3 to 4 sessions a week, and they are quite long in powerlifting. Like, an average session is probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Because the weights are so heavy, the rests have to be long, and that's what takes quite a bit of time up with the sessions.
And does cardio come into it then as well? Are you on a treadmill, or is it just looking at more
really,
muscles?
No,
or?
You could do cardio with it, but it doesn't really play much of a part in it. Because the rests are quite long, you wouldn't need a very good cardio system for it. Now, in terms of me, I was cutting weight for this comp because there's different weight classes, so I had to cut 7 or 7.5 kilos. So I did have a little bit of like extra steps and cardio on the mix to bring that down. But that was purely the only reason. But as for cardio, the benefits of it with training, it doesn't have much of an extra benefit, except you will recover a bit quicker between sets, but it's not essential.
Yeah. Talk to me a bit about the nutrition. I know you said you had to cut weight, but I'd imagine, are you a fella that would eat 12 or 14 raw eggs, or are you more civilised than that? What sort of, what's the nutrition kind of in and around these events as well?
Yeah, a little bit more civilised than that. I would just say, like, it's normal lean food, really. The main thing you'll find is because the sessions are so demanding in terms of the weights that you're lifting and the duration of them, the main thing is keeping like fueled up around them. So making sure you've enough carbs in the system and you've enough protein to recover is the kind of key thing. Because I was cutting down weight for it, which not everyone has to do, it depends what weight they walk around at, I was dropping down my food as time closed in. But the main thing with we'll say nutrition around training for powerlifters is just making sure you have enough petrol in the tank to get the job done. That's the main thing.
Yeah, I'm just constant time down. Unfortunately, we're pretty much out. Yep. But I'm just interested to see what's your plan for next year. Is it go back and defend that title? Do you change weight grade? Do you aim to go to maybe England or Europe, or what's kind of on the agenda for 2026?
So next year, the plan is I should be getting an invite, hopefully, for European Championships. Now, that I think is around March, but dates are still to be confirmed. So there could be a couple of international showings next year, which would be really, really cool to wear the Irish singlet, because it's every powerlifter's dream, really. And outside of that, I would like to move up a weight class after that. But if not, I might potentially stay in the same one and defend the title next year. But it's kind of up in the air at the moment, depending on dates and timelines for international comps. But that's how it's looking at the moment.
No, brilliant. Look, Darren, pleasure chatting to you. Continued success. Enjoy the training. Hopefully you can have your turkey for Christmas dinner, not raw eggs. And we might check in again next year. If we hear you're heading off to Europe, whatever else, we might check in again and see how preparations are going. But Darren, thanks again for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Take care.
It's a pleasure. That's Darren Maloney there from Castle Island. He's an Irish champion powerlifter at the National Championships last weekend in Meath. That's about all we've got time for this evening. Thanks to Liam and John discussing all things football in the first hour. Best of to all the lads in the Killarney Historic Rally on Saturday. To Noel and Rory in particular, who join us this evening, to organiser Anthony O'Connor as well, and everyone involved there. Thanks to Niamh, Niamh O'Sullivan. I'll thank my other Niamh after that, but our Kerry runner in the cross country, and of course to Darren Maloney from Cass Island. Thanks to Niamh Daly, who produced the programme. Next up is Talk Sauce, of course, with Mary Conroy. We'll be back next Monday evening to do it all again. Best of luck to all the sides in the district championships next weekend as well. Until then, so long of all.